Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
And we are back for season two of Kicking It with Kidneys, a forum to discuss important topics for historically suppressed voices within communities of color. Now, as we close out season one of Kicking It with Kidneys, Dr. Mary Washington, aka Rapper MD, provided a wealth of knowledge regarding the benefits of plant-based diets as a necessary lifestyle change to reduce the explosion of chronic kidney disease and avoidance of dialysis. Friends, we are living in strange and uncertain times, so I thought it beneficial to re-examine the role that you and I must play to reduce healthcare inequality and disparities. Political influence brings about economic change. This can only be achieved by enacting laws that provide access to education, health, wealth, and safety. Kicking It with Kidneys is not a political forum, but as history will show, that neither side of the spectrum has appropriately represented minorities. We simply are not prepared to meet the challenge of the New World Order. All right, so our KIWK team is back. BJ Simone, Maria Jimenez, Rita Williams. Now, the topic of our discussion today is how politics affects your healthcare. You're probably asking yourself, what in the dickens does politics have to do with my kidneys? Our guest today, Dr. Richard A. Johnson III, is going to provide some clarity on this topic. BJ, what is the word on the street?
Hello, everyone. Today, our word on the street has many voices, but they're saying the same thing. And that is the current healthcare policies, laws, funding are not meeting the needs of communities of color. Also concerning is a trend that indicates an increase in healthcare disparity for some of our most vulnerable members of society. So let's listen to what they have to say.
Startling new statistic. According to the CDC, life expectancy in the U.S. dropped by a year and a half in 2020. COVID-19 is largely to blame. It's the largest one-year decline since World War II. Hispanic and Black communities were hit the hardest. Their life expectancy dropped about 3 years.
Up to 4,000 people line up for their one shot to see a dentist or a doctor in a year. You know, 50% of farm workers have never seen a dentist in their lives. 80% haven't seen a physician in over 4 years. So these disparities are real. They're not just numbers. They're not just ideas. They're not just theories. They're real, and real people are suffering because they can't get health care.
It's the fact that my family ended up with heart disease, emphysema, diabetes, cancer. My mother's sister, her daughter, died of diabetes. She was an amputee. My mother died of a massive heart attack. And,
to address health disparities, we need to understand why they exist, that they're not due to one single factor. They're the result of policy decisions we make as a society. They're due to the environment, health education, insurance and access to care, access to healthy food, and stress.
One of the reasons Indigenous Americans were hit so hard by the pandemic is because their communities lacked basic resources to take preventative measures.
We have communities that don't even have running water. When the CDC put out the recommendations that said you needed to wash your hands for 20 seconds in warm water, my question to them was, where are we supposed to get this warm water from in places where there has been no infrastructure built to bring water to our community? As a result of the chronic underfunding of the Indian Health Service, these facilities very often are not able to provide more than primary medical care. If we don't get the resources that we need, it's always going to be a struggle for us to begin to address the underlying health conditions.
What can we do as a society to eliminate these differences that really shouldn't exist?
All right. Well, our special guest today is Richard A. Johnson III, a native Texan with a strong conservative value or values, and a proud father of four children and one grandson. He was born in Houston's Fifth Ward, the very same community that the late Barbara Jordan and George Mickey Leland grew up in. In 1984, Richard graduated from Wiley College, home of the great debaters, with a BA in history and government. Following 3 years of active duty in the United States Army, he went on to graduate from Texas Southern University in 1992 with a master's degree in clinical psychology. After years of teaching and conducting research, he obtained the doctoral degree in education administration from Texas Southern University in 2014. Richard is currently serving as the director of the Booker T. Washington Initiative within the Texas Public Policy Foundation. In this role, he provides the essential leadership necessary to enhance the opportunities of freedom, equality, and justice through personal responsibility, sound education policies, and economic development. So welcome, Richard, and how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. How's everybody going? How's everybody doing out there? Everything's going great on my end.
All right. You're kind of outnumbered here. I think it's a four women to one man, but I think you can handle it. Okay. So we're going to start out with asking you some basic questions. Now, can you explain the term legislation in layman's term and why it is so important that patients with chronic kidney disease and other chronic medical illnesses understand how laws influence the outcome of healthcare?
I tell you what we're going to do, Cindy, because you know this is going to be a great topic. One of the things is knowledge is power, but information is wealth. And so once you can have all the knowledge you want, but if you don't have the appropriate information on where to apply the knowledge to transfer it into wealth in terms of healthcare, your economics, the whole nine yards, you're just going to be a smart, probably broke or sick person.
Smart, broke or sick. All right. I like that.
So basically, you know, when we talk about legislation, it sounds like a really big deal. But really, all legislation starts out with an idea. A bill is an idea that someone has. And the challenge that we see in African-American or communities of color is we basically don't know the process. We don't know the process, so we don't engage. And so what ends up happening is that a lot of things pass us by. So let's talk about legislation.
Okay.
Legislation is an idea. Usually a practitioner or a person who's working in the field will recognize some things that nobody else sees. And they say, hey, wait a minute, man, this thing is wrong. If we just fix this one thing right here, then we create this policy, it'll save about a bunch of people's lives. So what they do is they get that idea. Now it has to come from the streets, like word on the street.
Not a word on the street
have to be the word in the suites. We have to get the word from the streets to the suites, you know?
All right.
And so basically our next step, usually you should be able to take that idea to your state representative or your representative, even in Congress, and say, hey, I got an idea. This problem, I know how to fix it. And then they'll say, okay, give me your idea. So you give them the idea, and they have what's called a legislative council.
Okay.
And so they turn your idea into the legislative council.
Let me ask you something, Richard. How are the people that sit on the legislative council chosen?
Well, they're all lawyers. They work for the state. Let's just say the state of Texas.
Okay.
They have about 200 lawyers that work for them. And it's called a legislative council. So what you do is what your legislator will do. They won't sit there themselves and write out the bill. Mm-hmm. They'll take your idea. They send an email to legislative council. It's assigned to a lawyer there. And then they kick them back a bill. And it's in bill format. And so what then your legislator will do is file that bill. And then with their name on it, give it a title, file it. You know, kicking it with kidneys. Mm-hmm. And they file kicking it with kidneys, and it becomes a bill. Now your bill has to go from being just filed to getting assigned to a committee.
Okay. Okay.
And so then, you know, Richard Johnson, John Q. legislator, then will fight to get it assigned to a committee by a speaker. And then once it's assigned to a committee, then Richard will call Cindy and the Kicking It With Kidneys team and say, hey, I need you guys to send 20 people up here to this committee meeting supporting this bill. Because I want to get it out of committee. So basically, everything starts off with an idea. And anybody can have an idea. Just to give you kind of a brief look at it, every legislative session, there's about 13,000 bills filed. That means 13,000 ideas.
Okay.
Now, only 1,000 get signed into law.
So what happens to the rest of it?
Bunch of bad ideas, man. They didn't make it through the process.
Oh, they didn't make the cut, is what you're saying. Yeah. They didn't make the cut.
The system is designed to kill bad ideas.
Okay,
Because you got everybody out there with ideas, so they shoot holes in it, they wrap it around. And then the ones that live are really good ideas.
Okay. All right, I think Maria has a question for you.
I do. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Johnson. It's good to see you. Thank you for your words of wisdom that you'll share with the communities that, you know, really need this help. But my first question, you've already kind of touched on the legislation process, because a lot of communities of color don't realize that when healthcare laws are passed, how it is done. So you talked a little bit more about, you know, you talked about the legislation process. Is there any difference with any other bill, whether it's related to healthcare, whether it's related to, you know, criminal? Do they all have to go through that same process, or is it different for healthcare law?
No, they all go through the same process. I can tell you the biggest challenge that we have in the African American community is, well, it's basically across the board. Is, you know, when you talk about healthcare, you talk about practitioners. Mm-hmm. Most healthcare providers are practitioners. They're not policymakers.
Right. You know, exactly.
They want to do their job and do it really, really good and mm-hmm. save people's lives. Mm-hmm. But in the process of that, they run across so much information on what really will save people's lives. And they have to have a voice to get that up to the policymaking level. Because when you get to the policymaking level, you talk about healthcare. That's where all the dollars are. You know, that's where all the money is, really. You know, the biggest bank in the world is the United States government, because if they run out of money, they'll just print some more and then change the definition of what's money and make everybody else call it money.
Well, since you talked about money, I mean, in healthcare, I kind of want to jump into my second question, if that's okay. You know, chronic kidney disease affects minorities, people of color, to the tune of, I want to say, $120 billion or so. How can these communities we've got a budget allocated to them, how can they be more involved in policy when it's concerning them, and how can they be heard?
Here's what we really don't do a lot of, Maria. We don't hold our elected officials accountable. You know, when we're having a huge healthcare problem, when we're having a huge education problem, and our elected officials, Black elected officials and elected officials of color mm-hmm. are marching to get voting rights that we already have. Mm-hmm. No, let's march to get more involvement in healthcare. Let's march to get more involvement in enhancing education. I'm not saying don't march. Mm-hmm. I'm saying let's just march for the right stuff.
Well, we shouldn't be marching. No way. Wasn't it slaves freed in 1865? Why are we still marching, Richard?
That's not a protest.
I think this is a strategy from the past. We need to upgrade our strategy a little bit. And we need to be on social media, and we need to be talking about, you know, the disparities in terms of the folks who are experiencing renal problems versus the amount of providers that we have coming out of our community, you know, providing that service to our community. Yeah. So those are the things that we need to be talking to our elected officials about, and then electing the folks who talking about what we really need in our community. Sometimes we elect people that's not talking about what we really need. They just look good, you know?
Right. But we have some roadblocks. Rita wants to ask you about one of those roadblocks. Rita?
Hi, Dr. Johnson. Thank you so much for joining us. So politics are like oil and water. I've heard a lot about lobbyists. What is the role of a lobbyist, and why do minorities have such a difficult securing advocates and professional services to act on their behalf?
Lobbyists are individuals that specialize in advocating for a particular issue based on what association will hire them, what companies hire them. They're there basically on that particular issue for that particular association or company. They're not talking about anything else.
They're not humanitarians is what you're
saying. That's their job.
It's fee for service, right?
Yeah. That's their job. Exactly.
Okay.
Their job is to go to Washington or go to Austin or whatever state capital that you're in. And they're to connect with people on that committee that deals with that particular issue. And they're there to convince them that my team is the right team to be on. And this legislation supports my team.
That's money, though.
You have to pay them.
So where are we going to get the money from, Richard? Where does minorities get that kind of money?
Yeah. Well,
minorities, you know what's interesting, Cindy? Just Black people.
Okay.
Black people spend $1.2 trillion a year. Mm-hmm. $1.2 trillion a year in consuming goods. And for African-American women, you all know which one is at the top of the list. Hair care. Cosmetics. I'm just keeping it real. You told me to come on the show and keep it real.
Ms. Barclay, a hip pig will holler. Don't holler.
Now Black people got money. We have money. Mm-hmm. We should put the tennis shoes aside.
Okay, all right.
Well, the thing of it is, sometimes we don't spend on the right stuff, you know. Right.
A lot of times, Richard, a lot of times.
Yeah, and we leave it up. We leave it up to our elected officials. One of the things that we've been trained in our community is we listen to our preachers and we listen to our elected officials. And when we see them, because you know how we do, when we greet them, we say, we want to thank the Honorable Cindy Barclay for spending some time, giving us some time out of her busy schedule, who represents us down in D.C. or represents us in Austin.
Uh-huh.
But Cindy works for us.
Yeah.
Cindy works for us. We should not be experiencing huge healthcare disparities when we have so many Black elected officials, you know, to fight for us in City Hall, to fight for us at the state capitol and at the nation's capitol. But the unfortunate thing is, when we keep getting bad outcomes, we don't change. We keep doing the same thing, expecting different outcomes. And some folks say that's a little insane, right?
Yeah. So you're saying, Dr. Johnson, we should demand more from our elective folks?
No, I say we should hire more lobbyists.
Okay.
Because if that's the game, that's the game. You know, if you're playing in the game and you go to Austin and you go to D.C., and you see all of your competitors have representatives working there every single day to get their legislation through. Because don't get it twisted. The state budget is right at $300 billion. And when we open up, we only stay open 6 months. So we have to spend $300 billion in 6 months. Every association, every organization, every company knows that. They're up there. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing, Cindy, you brought up the real word. They're at the table. So look, if you're not on the table, you're on the menu.
You're right about that. BJ, what questions do you have for Richard?
I'm just keeping it real with the word on the street, you know that?
Yeah.
BJ, I'm just trying to keep it real, you know?
How
Hello, Dr. Johnson. It is, again, an honor to meet you. But I have to say, I'm very familiar with Marshall, Texas. My mother was her hometown. Yes.
Yeah.
But she was a graduate of Bishop.
Okay. Well, you know, Wiley College, home of the great debaters, you know.
You got it. You got it. We know that disease prevention is essential to reducing the expense of chronic illness in communities of color. But we've heard a lot about why the disparity exists. We've heard that it exists because of environmental conditions. We've heard it exists because of economic deficits and single parent households, reliance on government subsidies. And then some simply believe that minorities just don't have a good work ethic. So that could lead people to believe maybe that minorities have gotten complacent with progress. So my question to you is, as a community, how can we get our mojo back? How can we get that momentum we need to improve these healthcare outcomes?
Well, you know, all of the above, but not really the real answer. You know, you know, all these variables that you mentioned, all the variables that you mentioned do have an effect on African-American healthcare, African-American life, human life, period. Right. However, there are some things that we have in place that we just don't know. I had an opportunity to visit with MD Anderson Hospital. And I visited with them because of their marketing department. They were receiving $250 million for marketing. Right?
For marketing.
Annually?
Huh? Biannually, every other year. $250 million, right?
Yeah.
And so that was during the time I was the chief of staff for a state representative. And I said, okay, give me the breakdown of the marketing budget that goes to the African-American community. And when they gave me the breakdown of the marketing budget that goes to the African-American community, it was maybe about 1%. And so I said, well, let me see how many marketing companies that are people of color that's receiving these resources. It was zero. And so I say, here's our problem.
Yeah.
Because if you start marketing in the communities of color using the marketing mechanisms, the newspaper outlets, the radio, the podcast that's reaching the people of color, then you're going to get a change in the behavior because of the marketing dollars. So everybody looked at me strange, but the thing about it is MD Anderson is not a private hospital. It's a public hospital. Mm. It's owned by the state under University of Texas, which is public dollars.
Right,
we all pay taxes. So really, they cannot turn you away for treatment at MD Anderson, even though it looks really nice and it looks really richy, but it is a public hospital. Just like Ben Taub is a public hospital.
But what a difference. What a difference in the way that both of those institutions look.
Yes. And one of them is very, 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 very wealthy. And that's MD Anderson.
Yeah.
But the thing of it is, we have to be courageous as King was in the 60s. Right stuff.
Yeah.
But see, it's easy for me to go and fight for the gains that King has already made and the civil rights movement already made. It's more challenging for me to
do something different,
pierce new ground.
Exactly.
And so knowing that, and I told all the Black elected officials, they know now what MD Anderson marketing budget is. Have you heard anything from them?
Nothing.
No.
So
reaching out, BJ, to the community. There's this old thing, that old saying, if you know better, you'll do better. if we withhold information that's going to help individuals do better, we know that they're not going to progress as rapidly as communities that have the information. So knowledge is power, information is wealth. We have to be information seekers.
Rita has a question, and it goes back to, you know, a lot of people are not versed. People of color are not as versed as you are, or even anyone on the panel. So we depend on our elected officials to kind of step in for us. Rita, what was your question on that?
And Dr. Johnson kind of touched on it. So my question is, many minorities practice what we call batch voting, where the majority of the voters tend to follow the community leaders, the pastors, activists, and politicians. What measures can elected officials take to ensure that voters have access to voter education?
People who know benefit greatly from people who don't know.
Right.
You know, ignorance for the knowledgeable is an asset. You know, because basically, if you don't know any better, then it's easy to take advantage of you. And so basically what we end up having is a lot of our elected officials need to keep that gauntlet. They need to keep that crown on their head. And the only way to do that is to be leading you, because if you know, you might force them to make a real decision. But if you don't know, they're not forced to make a real decision. So basically, it may not be in their best interest to have you as educated as you should be.
Right.
And you see that a lot in the African-American community. There's a lot of knowledge that's kept at different levels.
Right.
Martin Luther King said, "Truth crushed against the earth shall rise again." That means you have to press the truth down through the layers, through the ministers, through the politicians, through the community leaders, to the grassroots. And once the grassroots get the real truth, they wake up. And then Martin says that they will rise.
Right.
But you got to get past the layers. Huh?
Knowledge is power.
Sure. And information as well.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people depend on our public officials not understanding that there are bills that are passed that are not necessarily voted on by the people. Can you touch on that a little bit? I mean, something will come down the pipeline and you go, well, when did this happen? Well, the public didn't know anything about it. How is that done?
Well, the thing of it is, you know, an educated electorate is the best thing. That's the American dream. That's the American idea, is to have an educated electorate. That's the reason why we have systems in place, what we call it, a electoral college. The reason we have electoral college is because the framers understood you couldn't just trust the whole group of people, because you got a lot of folks who will follow people just because they're popular and have nothing, and they'll lead you right to the slaughter. So they needed an educated group of people to basically say, okay, this is what's right, this is what's wrong, this is the right way to go. The benefit that we could have in a Black community is if we had politicians trying to educate the electorate.
Well, Richard, you keep saying Black community, and I appreciate that because you look like me, but Rita get mad over there. Rita saying, why are you leaving the Hispanic people out? You didn't see her facial expression?
Communities of color, yeah. You know, communities of color, because both, you don't see much gain made in either the Black or brown communities. But you see a lot of gain made by elected officials in the Black and brown communities.
Yes.
Their kids don't go to the schools that they went to. You know, and if you go, I tell you what, if you look at some of our Congress people, right, and you look at what their net value was when they became Congress representatives, and then you look at what their net worth is now, they went from zero to hero. They went from their ledger went from $10,000 a year to $10 million in terms of
wait a minute, Richard. What didn't that have to do with the cost of living increase? Didn't they get a raise?
Look here. Everybody that they represent would love to benefit from that kind of cost of living increase. You know, the thing of it is, we have to get back, black and brown, all communities of color, we have to get back to putting the people first. Mm-hmm. And if you put the people first, you'll live well, you'll live good. Opportunities will come your way. But healthcare is a paramount issue in communities of color because of this, the disparities. And folks will say, yeah, you know, socioeconomic status, that has something to play with it. Poverty has something to play into that. All those variables do. It doesn't matter whether you're black, white, brown, or purple. But information is the key to salvation in terms of healthcare and quality of life. If you don't have the information, you will make some mistakes. Because if you don't know better, you just don't know better.
Yeah.
But if you do know better.
And that's where the majority of people are, not knowing better.
Exactly. And it's an innocent thing, Cindy. It's not, they
the
just
strong,
don't know.
The strong prey on the weak, and therefore it doesn't make them aware of what's going on. And that's what's going on with our healthcare as well, especially with chronic kidney disease. 37 million, I can guarantee you 80%, no, let's just say 75% are minorities, okay?
And so why shouldn't minority companies have a lion's share of that business? Simply because if I come from the community and I provide the service that's harming the community, I know all the different nuances of the community. I don't have to go in trying to learn that. I can move quicker and I can help people do better faster. That's common sense, but we have to take that common sense to a policy level.
That was back to BJ's question that you were asking, BJ, about legislation.
Well, Dr. Johnson, you've got me to thinking. We said in that last question that maybe minorities are seen to be complacent, but now you have me thinking, is there something that could be considered complacency legislation? Because the legislation that has been targeting economic development and job development within minority communities has not closed the gap between minorities and other socioeconomic groups. And you've told us a little bit that it's education and information that will make the difference. But is there anything else you think that can be done to improve economic equality?
I can't say it enough. It's representation. You know, you mentioned information, those things. It's representation. Remember, if you're not at the table, that means you, your voice, not somebody who just looked like you like this. Your voice, if your voice and your ears aren't at the table, then you're on the menu.
Absolutely.
Somebody's got to get eaten. You know, somebody's got, Cindy told me to keep it real.
Somebody's
got to get ate up in here, man. It's only so much out there. Mm-hmm. If you're not there at the table, you're going to be it.
But
you're going to fall.
Are we not getting legislation that is designed to make people feel that they're getting something? You know, if we give you a little bit, then you'll be quiet and there will be no thirst for additional knowledge.
I like your thinking, BJ. Yes, we are getting legislation to make you think you're getting help.
Crumbs.
You see, my grandmother used to say this, you know, she said, yeah, that boy out there, he hit a lick at a snake, man. You know, she's a country girl. Say he hit a lick at a snake. He ain't gonna kill nothing. He's just gonna hit a lick at a snake. And then you hear our elected officials, I'm fighting for you. You know, Cindy will fight for you. We got to vote for her. She'll fight for you. And nobody stops saying, is she winning? I need somebody
like
who's gonna win every now and then.
Yeah.
You know, I need somebody who's gonna win, and that means getting legislation across the finish line that makes a demonstrative change and difference in my community in a positive way.
So, Richard, then why should we care if people of color are in powerful positions if we're doing the nonsense, the same old adjectives over and over again, and we're not getting anywhere. It's just that because you're Black, you're in this position. Why should I care? Then I need to go out then and start looking at other folks that maybe can push a bill or two through for me.
There you go. Look here.
All right. Oh,
you gotta be smart as a wino. See, a wino don't care nothing about the label. All he concerned about is what the content in the bottle.
Amen.
I write policy. That's what I do. I write policy and I analyze policy. It doesn't matter to me what the label is, whether you're Democrat, Republican, Independent, whether you're Black, White, Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
I just need somebody who can get this idea across the finish line. And you show me that you're a winner, I want you to carry my message.
So you're saying as minorities, we need to stop that crab in the barrel syndrome to where we think, oh, he's so-and-so because he's Black or he's in our communities. It doesn't necessarily work for us is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the thing about it is we wanted to, though. I mean, this,
yes.
You know, honest, guy. Yeah. We wanted to. We're cheering for him. We want him to think and fight the right battle.
Yeah.
But time after time, they jump up. You see them on TV fighting the wrong battle. Look, you on the wrong field. We're supposed to be fighting over here.
Yeah.
You're expending all your energy over here and saying that that's my voice. That's not my voice. My voice is over here fighting for these things.
Mm-hmm,
and so we have to find people who will represent us at the policy level on the issues that are dear to us.
Well, you know, they say Bill Clinton was the first Black president. So I guess he wasn't a Black man. But the bottom line is that whatever he was doing at that time worked for us. So he wasn't Black.
Some of what he did worked for us, but some of it didn't. I mean, Black folks lost 6 million.
We ain't talking about monarchy. We ain't talking about
6 million acres under Clinton. And land is how we pass down generational wealth.
Right.
This is true.
But the key is, don't worry so much about the label.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on the policy, because the policy is what makes the changes in America. The rules, the policies are the rules. And even every penny that we spend in the legislature, Texas and state and Fed, have to be done through a policy. Those policies are laced with dollars. And folks try to keep us away from understanding policy and want us to get off into the bling bling and, you know, the signifying and qualifying, you know. Mm-hmm. But now let's get into quantifying. How, like my little daughter, you say, how much for me, Daddy? I don't want to talk about that. How much for me? She was quantifying. She don't want no speech. How much for me?
But Dr. Johnson, additional question. Once we've elected the representation, mm-hmm. what is the outline or the course of action that communities of color can follow to make sure that those elected officials are, showing what they were elected to do? Their job. So we've elected them. We followed it, we listened to them, we elected them, and they're not doing it. What can the community do besides not reelect them?
Well, that's a big part right there, because you keep reelecting them 30, 40, 50 years. But that's a big part, unelecting.
Yeah.
The other part is having watchdog groups. You know, there are watchdog groups. The other folk, the majority population, they do that. They have watchdog groups. They have folks who are watching the legislation. They're watching the legislators. And to see who is supporting what's good for them and who is not supporting what's good for them. Those who are not, they start working on the unelected portion of it.
Yeah, but in our communities, especially like in Third Ward, Fifth Ward, you know, like in the wards in those areas, a lot of the people look to the ministers, you know? And I don't consider that a watch group, do you?
Heck no, man. Come on. The ministers is part of that layer that you got to get the truth passed.
Yeah, Yeah.
Martin said, he said, you know, truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne, you know, but within the scaffold sways the future, and behind them unknown, standing God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. But at
that was beautiful, Richard. You know, that was just beautiful. I'm touched. Okay, keep going.
You know, we have to press truth beyond those layers.
Yeah.
And get it to the grassroots. Because you know what my mom is, she's the smartest person I ever met. She really is. Mm-hmm. And she didn't finish the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And most of my theories that I develop with my doctorate, I go sit down and have a cup of coffee with my mom, and she tells me how to say it where people can understand it. You know, so you don't have to have highly educated people with a lot of formal degrees to make the changes and make the differences in the community.
My mom
called it having mother wit, a common sense. Most good people got common sense if you just listen to them.
Yeah.
You know, that's how we change the world. We change that, getting those common sense solutions into policies and then navigating them through the system so they can become the law.
Well, we as minorities, we have a lot of work to do because as we previously stated, I mean, we're basically fighting a new frontier now. I mean, a new forefront. Everything is changing, technology. And if we're not up on things and if we're not trying to help ourselves, I fear that our whole race will be lost. You know, Richard, I believe in desegregation. BJ and I oftentimes have this conversation about race. When we were desegregated, it seems like more opportunity and more things happened. We were more conscientious. We were more community oriented. And when we became segregated, I mean, when we became integrated, something happened. I mean, how do you feel about that?
Well, we kind of lost ourselves in integration. You know, everybody's ice became colder than ours, and everybody's sugar became sweeter than ours. You know, everybody's store became a better store than ours. So, you know, during segregation, the dollars turned over in our communities 100 times because it had to.
We could
go outside of our communities and work and make money, but we couldn't spend it outside. We had to spend it inside. So that made a lot of wealthy millionaires in the Black community.
I love that analogy.
We were self-sufficient. But then when some smart folks say, you know what? We need to let them integrate because they need to spend that money out here. Somebody started thinking more green than black and white. And they said, okay, we passed integration. And so now the dollar turns less than one time in the Black community because we take our dollars out. That's a mindset. Yeah. Just like we spend $1.2 trillion a year in consuming products from the Black community. Well, how much of that are we spending amongst ourselves in our own businesses? And when you talk about something like healthcare, which is the most important thing that we have, my health, if I don't have my health, I can't make it. And I need to trust people who know me and who's on the same common ground with me that's an expert in this field to help me. And we used to have that. We had Black-owned hospitals. We had minority-owned clinics everywhere. And people went to those clinics and they knew the people there. They knew the professionals there. The professionals knew them. The kids went to school together. And that's community.
Wow. All right. So this was excellent. This is excellent. BJ, do you have any words for Richard or any questions for Richard?
No, I don't. It has, again, been an honor to hear you. I have learned. I'm going to jump ahead and do my final thought. My final thought, Dr. Johnson, new rally call is how much for us?
I like that. Yay!
Out of the mouth of babes, right? Out of the mouth of babes. They just say what's on, they say what's real to them.
That's right.
How much for me, Daddy?
I like that. Rita?
Thank you, Dr. Johnson, for your words of wisdom. You gave us so much to think about and take back to the Latino community and really, like you said, get back to the grassroots and stuff. So my final word, and it's coming back from you because I wrote it down, is your voice counts. And if not, you're on the menu. That really
if you're not at the table, you're on the menu.
I'm not. I don't want to be on the menu. I don't want to be on the menu.
Okay, Maria.
Thanks again, Dr. Johnson, for joining us and spreading your wisdom to the community. My final thought is from basically what you're saying about the money that we're spending as a community and just making sure that that money is sent back to our community. And I don't think that women getting their hair done by their black stylists, we putting money in the community. That hit me too. But
I think he was talking about maybe we don't need to go as often. Is that what you were saying, Ricky? We don't need to go every week.
Use some of that for your lobbyists. You know, you need for your professional help at the state and national levels.
Okay. That makes a whole lot of it. Okay. So Richard, thank you so much for being here. And what are your final thoughts? What words of or what suggestions do you have for listeners that want to become more active in decision-making regarding our health? What can we do?
The first thing you must do is read. R-E-A-D.
Oh, wait a minute. You it was like you cursed me out. You know, people don't read no more. You done said a bad word.
Well, come on, you know, you got to do that. You know, the first thing you have to do is read.
Yeah.
And be up on your health.
Yeah.
Read up on your health. And think healthy, because this body that we have, this machine that we have, we have to take care of it, because God only gave us one. And so if we don't take care of it, then I'm no good to you in any other way. I'm no good to my kids. I'm no good to my family unless I keep myself healthy. So think healthy, be healthy, and read up on health opportunities out there for yourself.
And your political...
And make sure your elected officials and your representatives are doing the right thing about your health. Because if they're not doing the right thing about your health, they're not arguing for the right bills and right thoughts and right legislation about your health, then you need to find somebody else who'll do it. Or you do it.
Right. Yeah, right. That's right. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we're going to have you back. I hope you we treated you all right, didn't we?
I had a ball, Cindy. Thank you so much. I had fun. I love the crew. You guys are great.
Okay. So, everyone, we hope you've enjoyed the show. And we look forward to you joining us next week on another episode of Kicking It with Kidneys.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week.
The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.